You are Locked On Buccaneers, your daily Tampa Bay Buccaneers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Forfeit the game before somebody else takes you out of the frame. Put your name to shame, cover up your face. You can't run the race, the pace is too fast, you just won't last.
What's up and welcome back to the Locked On Bucs podcast. I'm James Yarko, joined as always by David Harrison. You can find everything that we're doing over at BucsNation.com and make sure you follow along on Twitter at Locked On Bucs, at Jarko underscore Bucs, at DH82 underscore Bucs, and at Bucs underscore Nation. David, the NFL schedule has officially been released and I have the Buccaneers schedule pulled up in front of me. So real quick, I'm going to run down the list and we're going to talk about a few of these games before we move on and discuss some of the things that Jason Light had to say on Tuesday. Sound good?
Sounds great.
Outstanding. All right. The Bucs are going to kick off their season hosting former Buccaneer Quan Alexander and the San Francisco 49ers at 4:25. So we're starting the season off with a late afternoon game. Then they're at Carolina on Thursday. So their first two games are within 10 days of each other. So at Carolina Thursday night on NFL Network. Week three, they are home against the Giants at 4 o'clock. Week four, at the Rams, another 4 o'clock game. Week five, at the Saints. Week six, against the Panthers in London. So that's going to be a 9:30 in the morning start for those in the Eastern time zone. Of course, the week seven bye coming off of the London game. Then rounding out basically kind of the second half of their schedule here, at the Titans, at the Seahawks, home against the Cardinals, home against the Saints, at the Falcons, at the Jaguars, home against the Colts, at the Lions, and then they finish the season with two home games, one against the Texans and the other against the Atlanta Falcons. Now, the funny thing about this Texans game is that the date says December 21st or 22nd, and the day is to be determined, as is the time and the station that it will be on. So they're either going to have a Saturday or a Sunday game against the Texans. I guess I'm not sure why they would have not had that already figured out. I don't know if that's some sort of flex thing that they're doing. I mean, do you have any insight on that, David?
The only, like, nothing official. The only thing I could imagine is kind of like you said, they want that open as a flex position. I mean, Houston is potentially going to be a playoff contender. So that if it has playoff implications, maybe they have a host of other games that they could split between the Saturday and Sunday to make sure that people can see the most important games.
Yeah, and of course, the takeaway that I get is how brutal of a stretch the Bucs have right before the bye. They're at the Rams, they're at the Saints, and then they have to face the Panthers in London. That's a whole lot of traveling to do in 3 weeks against three solid opponents. You know, I do believe that the Buccaneers have more talent than the Panthers do, but it's a division game. And these teams know each other well. It's going to be difficult, especially with that travel involved. So you got to fly to the West Coast. You got to come back home. Then you got to fly to New Orleans. Then you got to come back home. Then you got to fly to London. That's a rough stretch right there to open up the season. So it's going to be crucial for the Buccaneers to start off at the very least 2-1 against the Niners, Panthers, and Giants.
Yeah, that's super rough. I don't know. Like, I almost wonder if someone in the Arizona Cardinals front office has something against whoever helps make the scheduling, because this is rough. Like, this is, It's welcome back to the NFL, Bruce Arians. Have fun with your 20,000 round trip month in the middle of this, basically the middle of the season. Shout out to Carmen Vitale for the mileage calculation. Flying all the way to Los Angeles and then coming back to New Orleans and then going to London and then back to Tennessee and then back to Seattle. Like, they're just ping-ponging between the furthest reaches of the NFL spectrum as far as geography is concerned. And no Florida games in the entire month of October. Granted, one of those weeks is a bye week, but still, from 22 September to 10 November, there is no Gulf Coast NFL football. That's just nuts.
Yeah, that's brutal. That is brutal. Almost two full months without playing a true home game.
Yeah. And I mean,
that's an uphill battle to climb, my friend.
Yeah, Nick Bosa and Quan Alexander and Jimmy Garoppolo coming into Tampa on week one or in week one. I mean, the Carolina Panthers, yeah, there's some expectation that they're going to have a down season, but it's the Panthers and the Bucs. Those are always competitive games, It doesn't. It's a division game that it's going to be competitive, and it's in prime time, and it's in Charlotte. The Giants at home. I mean, feasibly, you know, theoretically, if you had a circle one as kind of a very winnable game, that would probably be it. However, after going through two games in 5 days or two games in the span of 4 or 5 days there to open the season, who knows what the shape of the team is going to be. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. 2-1, like, you got to get a 2-1 start. If you go into week four against Los Angeles and then New Orleans and then Carolina overseas at 1-2 or heaven forbid 0-3, I mean, that's just bleh.
Yeah.
That's my analysis.
The official analysis is blech.
Goodness gracious. I mean, if they make it through there alive, like, honestly, man, like, just get into November at 500. Like, if you get into November at 500, then you've got 5 home games in the back half of your schedule, including, you know, 2 in a row to end the season against Houston and Atlanta. So just get to 500, man. Like, 4-4, just figure out a way to be 4-4 coming back home against Arizona, and you've got a shot. Wow. Just wow.
Yeah, that's
– I like Dirk rough. Coming to Tampa, though, in week 17. That should be pretty fun.
That is kind of funny. All right. Well, real quick before we move on, one of the things that I did notice, and I thought Greg Allman – had a great point, was if you're going to play the Niners, it's probably best to play them at a spot when, number one, Quan Alexander may not be cleared to play yet. And number two, it's Jimmy Garoppolo's first true game back since his injury. So you may catch them at the right time before they're really starting to gel and get going. Because, I mean, there's no doubt there's talent on that team. But getting them in the first week of the season might be beneficial for Tampa.
That's very true. And, you know, you have limited scouting, especially with a team getting a new head coach. The Niners are really going to have very limited information to work with as far as game planning for the Buccaneers. I know it's Kyle Shanahan, and, you know, you kind of talk, like, he's very familiar, obviously, with the Buccaneers, but he's not familiar with the Buccaneers, the remaining players in Tampa's defense, in the form that he's going to see them. And when we talked with Arizona media, when Bruce got hired by the Bucs, they talked about how he's notorious for not showing really anything that he's going to do during the regular season in preseason games. So they're not even going to be able to rely all that well on what they see in preseason from the Buccaneers unit. So, I mean, that is a plus. You are correct there. But I still just the thought of having Quan Alexander blitzing behind Nick Bosa is not. I don't like that, especially considering he's probably going to be against the right side of our offensive line for the Bucs. So, yeah. Just to recap.
Yeah, big fat bluch. David, let's go ahead and move on to some comments that general manager Jason Light had to say on Tuesday when he was talking a little bit of, you know, what their plans are in the draft.
I think we'll get a very good player at 5. I think we have a very good player. We have at least 5 players that we think will, at least 5, that if we stayed at our spot, that we'd be very happy with.
What's the separation from very good to just pretty good? I mean, how far back could you go?
We have a line drawn at a certain number. but it's still a talented group, a good group. I would say after a certain number, which I won't give, then they kind of all kind of are together in terms, and it's tougher than most years to really put which rank them your let's just say top 50 players because of that. But the flip side is what makes this draft exciting is those players, let's just pick a number out, 20 through 50 or 20 through 60 are all very good. So I think this is a deep draft. I think we're going to get good players in the second, third, fourth, fifth round. So we have plenty of, you know, I have a certain number of players I want to put. We start with 1,000 players. We whittle it down to 300. Then on draft day, I take about half of that. And those are the players that we go into the draft. These are the guys we know, we think, have the best chance of making the team. This year it was harder to come up with that because we could have expanded that more and more.
There's been a lot of talk about what Jason Light said to the media, and there's been multiple articles and all that stuff. So we're going to do something a little bit different. We're not so much going to react to what Jason said, as in, we're really going to kind of put on our own GM hats here. Jason said in his comments that he's not going to tell anybody where the line is, what the number is that he has figuratively drawn on his draft board, or maybe physically drawn. I don't know. Maybe he actually wrote or drew a line on their big board. What we're going to do now is we're going to draw our lines. So the way that I did this is I made what I called a picking line, and that line represents the divide between players that if I'm the general manager at pick five, these are the guys I'm picking at pick five. So if they're available, I'm just spending my pick. I'm not trading, and I'm not even probably entertaining trade offers. And then I picked a line that the name of it's going to kind of give it away, but I call it the white line. And what it is there's a player that I'm specifically targeting in this draft that I think that I would be most likely to get as the Buccaneers GM. So, but I also have a trade back limit to where I still feel like we get our player and stack up some draft capital. And then my final line is what I call the price line, which is the limit I'm willing to go to still get one of my targeted players. Jason Light mentioned that there was a group of players, right, that he kind of viewed as kind of the top half of the talent pool. And then after that, there was a pool of, you know, he referenced 20 to 60 players or so who were kind of beyond that. And that would be the next tier that he's really not looking to dip into. So he's trying to stay in that kind of first tier, if you want to call it that, group of talent. However, getting into that group, you're basically forfeiting the opportunity to pick Devin White. So that's going to cost the team that trades up with them a little bit extra because of what the Buccaneers are sacrificing, i.e. not drafting kind of their top target and assuming that the team trading up with them is probably going after a quarterback. So those are the three lines I've drawn for this, James. Are you drawing the same lines or do you have different lines that you're drawing for this?
I think I'm not sure where my line is at this moment in time. I think that there are three players, in my opinion, and I know I'll probably get destroyed by some for my opinion, but there's three players worth taking at number five. The first is obviously Quinnen Williams, and I'm just assuming the Bosa's gone. There's no chance he drops to five. Otherwise, there would be four players.
Okay.
So
this is your picking line. Like what I call the picking line, if one of these players is available at pick five, we're not answering the phone. We're just turning in our card.
Ooh. Well, see, there's one that I would still pick up the phone.
Well, then he's not on your picking line, my friend.
Okay. All right. Well, then this is my picking line. It's three players, including Bosa.
Okay.
Which would be Bosa, Quinnen Williams, and Josh Allen. That's my line. You know, and I know some people don't like Josh Allen. I'm not really sure why. I think he's an instant impact guy. I think he's a player that you can really improve your defense with. He has incredible talent, incredible get off, incredible speed, all of it. He's a phenomenal player. That's why he keeps getting mocked to go in the top four, which is why it seems so unlikely for him to drop to five. So if those three players are there, I'm not picking up the phone.
Okay.
Now, if Devin White is there, I'm thinking about taking him. And that's the pick that I said the people are going to crush me for. I'm thinking about picking up the phone for Devin White. And yeah, inside linebackers don't get the stats. They don't need the stats. It's what they do for the rest of the defense. They help the front end. They help the back end, especially someone at the caliber of Devin White. He's good in coverage. He's helping the secondary. He's good at run stopping. He can get after the quarterback when asked to. He has sideline to sideline speed. He's helping everybody in the front seven. That's what he does. No, he's not going to have these groundbreaking sack numbers, but look at the impact that he would have on the players around him. That's why he's worth that number five pick, that some people don't seem to understand how that works. So I'm strongly considering Devin White there, but I'm picking up the phone. If somebody wants to leapfrog the Giants and get a quarterback and they're going to give up some draft capital, I will absolutely listen because I can slide back. I can pick up, you know, one or two additional picks this year, maybe another pick next year. And then I can look to some of these other guys like a Devin Bush, like an Ed Oliver, like a Brian Burns or a Montez Sweat. You know, these are guys, or a Cleveland Farrell, Wilkins. Help me out.
Christian Wilkins.
Thank you. I kept wanting to say Quinnen. I got Quinnen Williams on the brain. Christian Wilkins. These are the kind of guys that you can get by sliding back. So, no, you're not getting one of those elite top tier guys, but you may pick up three really good guys. You know, if my choice is Devin White, or you're going to give me Ed Oliver, Rockyson, and Deontay Thompson, yeah, give me that all day long. You know, and I love Devin White. He's one of my absolute favorite players in this draft. But now you're addressing three positions of need because you slid back a little bit. So that's kind of my line. I'm not picking up the phone if it's Williams, Bosa, or Allen. I just won't. Those are next level elite prospects. I'm wanting Devin White, but I'll listen. And then after that, there are plenty of other options, and you can turn that pick into multiple guys at positions of need. So that's kind of where I am at this moment in time.
Okay. So I have two players that I'm picking at five, no matter what. Like, if they're there, I'm not answering the phone.
Okay.
And that's what I call my picking line, right? And they are Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams. And I agree that I don't think there's any way Nick Bosa is going to be there at number five. But
no,
he's on the board, therefore he's under that line. He's under that picking line. And Josh Allen is not there. And I will tell you this. I don't like Josh Allen. And there's a very good reason I don't like Josh Allen. I just can't explain why I don't like Josh. So my feeling about Josh Allen reminds me, honestly, I can't remember the year. I guess I should have looked it up if I knew this was going to come up really. But when Matt Leiner, Vince Young, and Jay Cutler all came into the NFL, they were the three quarterbacks. It was VY and Matt Leiner, and then it was Jay Cutler, right? And I remember telling, I mean, I wasn't writing or doing any podcasts. I don't think podcasts even existed back then, but I wasn't in any sort of media stance whatsoever. However, I just remember telling buddies of mine when we talked about football that Jay Cutler, I felt like, was going to have the best career out of all of them, that none of them were going to be this transcendent quarterback. But at the end of the day, when you looked back at it, you would say that Jay Cutler had the best career. And everybody asked me why. Why was he better than Matt Leinart? Why was he better than Vince Young? And I said to them then what I'm going to tell you now about Josh Allen. I have no idea. It's just what I feel. Expert analysis.
Hey, you know, sometimes you get these gut feelings and you just roll with them.
Yeah, and I'm not going to lie. At first, I mean, I didn't really look a lot into Josh Allen before the combine anyway. But then when we're at the combine, I just got this feeling. I don't know. And I've been watching him a little bit since. Not as deep as obviously something like the Draft Network guys. You know, we don't get into prospects as deep as those guys by any means. However, I think we do a pretty good job of covering prospects, you know, from the perch that we're sitting on. And I've yet to really see. I mean, I see what people like in him. I look at him, and then just the feel I got from him in Indianapolis, I don't like the fit. I don't think it would work out very well. Doesn't mean he won't have a decent career or be a good guy, you know, for somebody else. I just, when I imagine him playing for the Buccaneers, playing in a Todd Bowles defense, I just don't think it would work. So Bosa and Williams are my two guys that I'm picking at five. I'm not even answering the phone. And then kind of like what you said with Devin White, I really like Devin White, and I don't care about the valuation of inside linebackers. I don't care if the thought process of him being the main or that position being the main need is up there. The way I look at it is I value a guy like Devin White more in this draft class because of the fact that he and Devin Bush are the only two starting caliber off-ball linebackers in this class. That's not a detraction from Devin White. It's a detraction from the interior linebacker class as a whole, that it's very weak this year. But even in a strong interior linebacker group, Devin White is still probably your top guy. So I'm good with Devin White at five. However, I am picking up the phone. If Nick Bosa and Quinnen Williams are gone, as much as I love Devin White, as much as I would love to see Devin White wearing a Buccaneers uniform in 2019,
wearing I'm still number
picking
40?
Up the phone. Yeah, wearing number 40, definitely. I'm still picking up the phone. If
we just, approves, lost 500 subscribers.
Yeah, maybe. So they're not going to hear me say this part. If Mike Allstott approves, then I'm definitely on board with Devin White wearing number 40. Because you know what? If Mike Allstott's okay with it, who the hell am I to disagree with him?
So, amen, brother.
But I created what I call the white line. Because if Devin White is on the board and I trade back, and I'm the general manager of the Buccaneers, which I am not, I'm going to try and trade back to a place where I can still get Devin White. And I'm willing to take a little bit less draft capital to stay in that window. And that's what I call the white line. And I'm not going to get into the full breakdown. So I'm writing a breakdown for BucksNation.com that you'll be able to read today, the same day that this episode is being published. because James is going to do me a solid and schedule it for today, even though we didn't talk about that before I just said this.
Yikes.
That line is the ninth pick, because I feel like if the Denver Broncos come on the clock at number 10 and Devin White is on the board, they're drafting Devin White. So if I'm going to trade back but still want to try to keep Devin White reasonably on the board, the ninth pick, which belongs to the Buffalo Bills, is the furthest I can go. So now you're looking at the Giants, you're looking at the Lions, you're looking at the Bills, and that's it. Or wait, I'm missing one. You're looking at the Giants, Jacksonville, that's what I'm missing. You're looking at the Giants, Jacksonville, Detroit, and Buffalo. Those are the four teams I'm answering the phone for first. And if any of those four teams gives me an offer to trade up, ideally you're probably looking at, what, a quarterback, right? So, I mean, are the Lions done with Matt Stafford? I don't think so. Are the Bills done with Josh Allen? Not at all. If the Bills trade up, you're probably looking at TJ Hawkinson. They're trying to get in front of Jacksonville for TJ Hawkinson. But what's the draft capital going to be from going from fifth to ninth for a tight end? Like, Jacksonville's probably not going to be all that interested in paying a whole lot for that pick. However, if I'm Jason Light and I really enjoy playing this draft game, right, which is what we've been told all offseason, he really enjoys playing the draft game, then maybe I'm willing to take, like, I don't know, a third round pick, and I shoot them a sixth or a seventh at the same time. We move back to number nine. The Bills get TJ Hawkinson for Josh Allen to overthrow in 2019. The Jags, I don't know what the Jags do, but the Jags don't need an interior linebacker. The Lions need an edge rusher. The Giants don't need an interior linebacker. So Devin White should still be there at number nine. We added another pick or two. And I'd feel good about that trade.
I honestly, truly, in my heart of hearts, believe that if the Bucs trade back at all, unless it's with the Giants, Devin White's not going to be there. Someone will take him. Even if it means that they trade up ahead of the Bucs to make sure that, like, I could see, let's say the Bucs do trade back to number nine with the Bills. Second straight year they trade with the Bills. Mm-hmm. I could see Denver jumping the Bucs to make sure that they get Devin White. I think there's a definite potential for that. Trade back at all, Devin White is going to be off the table.
So then you essentially have the same. So really, you have no white line, as I call it. You have your straight picking line, which is your three guys that you're picking at five. You're not even answering the phone. And then you've got your price line. So what you're saying to me is that somebody would have to overpay to get you to trade out, because you're essentially saying to yourself that you're gonna cost yourself a chance at Devin White.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm okay. I'm okay with that. And in your scenario, exactly. In your scenario, if they stay ahead of Denver, I'm okay trading back and picking up those extra picks. You know, maybe it is an early second round pick. So now you're looking at being able to address corner or safety in round two, where there is a little bit of a deeper draft pool, and you miss on White, but you get Ed Oliver. But, you know, even if Ed Oliver is gone, now you can still get Devin Bush, who I think is almost as good as Devin White. I think they both have the same ceiling, which is consistent Pro Bowl. You know, I'm not gonna fit him for a gold jacket or name him first team All Pros. I'm saying consistent Pro Bowl caliber play from either one of those guys. I think White is the better talent right now today, but I think they're both going to be very, very good to great NFL players. So you can still address that linebacker. That's the thing. And you and I have discussed it. That's the thing about drafting a linebacker early in this draft, whether it's White or it's Bush. After that, the drop-off is so steep, you are not going to find a starting caliber inside linebacker after those two are gone.
No.
You can make the argument for the kid out of Alabama whose name I can never remember.
Mack Wilson. No, you can't.
Yeah. And maybe somebody that you draft in round three or four develops into that a few years down the line. But that's the thing. The inside linebacker pool, or the linebacker pool in general, if you're talking about a 4-3 style outside linebacker, which we're not, the inside linebacker pool is so shallow that if you don't get one early, you don't get one at all. There will be interior defensive linemen later in the draft that can have an impact. There will be edge rushers later on in the draft that will have an impact. There will be members of the secondary, wide receivers, running backs, interior offensive linemen down the line that will have impacts on the team. Linebacker, no. If you don't get one of those top two guys, you are not getting a linebacker. No, at least not one that's going to do any more than special teams. That's the difference between, you know, a strength of a draft and a weakness of a draft. The weakness of this draft is interior linebackers. That's why you have to strike early. You can make up production out of defensive linemen, corners, and safeties later. You have to strike if you are in the position to get Busher White.
Yeah. And so this definitely turned into a draft position conversation more than a draft trade conversation. That's fine. However, what I'd like to remind everybody too. No, I'm good with it. When we talked to Shaquille Barrett, and I know Shaquille Barrett is not a Pro Bowl outside linebacker and edge rusher and all that, but this is a man who has been in the league for a good amount of time. He's got experience. He's played in a successful defense. And we asked him, how important is your Mike linebacker? And when every defense has its own terminology. When I say Mike linebacker and Shaq understood this, we're talking about the guy with the green sticker on his helmet, the guy that gets the defense set, the guy that makes the adjustments, the guy that makes the calls, the quarterback of the defense. We asked him, how important is that? And he said it was extremely important. And we asked him in relation to Devin White. And he went on much longer, really, than I expected him to. I honestly kind of expected one of those like canned football player, comments of, yeah, it's important. And if the Bucks, if Jason Light decides that Devin White's the guy to do it, then fantastic. But he said more than that. And he didn't get into a Daniel Jeremiah type breakdown of Devin White's film, but he went into traits that he knows Devin White has and personality features that he's seen Devin White present and leadership skills that he's already heard about of Devin White. So this is a dude who's in the middle of finding a new home. Free agency negotiations are going on, visits with teams or conversations with teams. Like you said, his family was still back at home. If you follow him on social media, you've seen he's had some events back in Denver while he's still in Florida, getting ready, doing OTAs, yet he's still paying attention to what's happening with this particular off-ball linebacker. That says something. When someone who's already in the league preparing to play in a game, play for a new team, has all this stuff going on, yet he still has time to pay attention to what's going on with you as a draft prospect, that means something. It doesn't necessarily mean Devin White's going to be a Hall of Famer, but what it means is that when he comes onto the field, when he comes into the locker room as a first-round draft pick, if this is how this goes down, at least one player, and we haven't talked to Levante, we haven't talked to Kendall, who knows what's going to happen with that whole thing, but at least one person in that locker room, in that linebacker room, which is one of the most important parts, because if the linebacker group doesn't respect your mic, nobody's going to respect your mic. But if Shaquille Barrett already has respect for this kid, you know Levante is gonna raise him up, is gonna do everything he can to put him on his Captain America shoulders and make sure he's successful. So now what? Your rookie edge rusher, your JPP, the consummate teammate, Carl Nassib. I mean, you can't survive in Cleveland unless you're a good teammate. So you talk about a support structure that a rookie could thrive in. Devin White definitely would have a linebacker room that he could thrive in. And he also happens to be the interior linebacker that has the requisite skills physically and mentally to make sure that his fellow teammates are also set up for success in turn. I mean, it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess this has now turned into a Draft Devin White podcast. But
Draft Devin White pod, the Locked On Draft Devin White. And listen, JC Cornell, friend of the show, CEO of the Draft Network, put in his mock draft, the only mock draft he's dropping this entire offseason. Go ahead and pre-order your custom Devin White jerseys. I'm getting my number 40, and it's going to be creamsicle because I love what Donovan Smith tweeted today.
That was pretty good. And of course, Quan decided to shoot his shot. And
I like it.
You know, the trash talk is starting already, week one. But David, we are out of time, mostly because I have to call into another podcast in about 90 seconds. So I'm going to wrap this up as fast as I can. Deep breath. Please make sure you're checking out everything going on over at BucksNation.com. Make sure you're calling us with your voicemails at 813-444-5841. Please make sure you are leaving us those 5-star iTunes reviews. Help other Buccaneers find us there on the iTunes searches. Make sure you're following along on Twitter at LockedOnBucks, at JRCO_Bucks, at DH82_Bucks, and at Bucks_Nation. And while you're on Twitter, make sure that you are using hashtag National High Five Day. That's right. Today is National High Five Day. So get on there, send us a high five gift using the hashtag. We really appreciate it. Hope you all have a safe, wonderful, and enjoyable day. And thanks so much for joining us right here at Locked On Bucks. Every night when the stars come out.